Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
Ace is the best place to get all you need for a great-looking yard this Labor Day weekend. Come in now and get top Scotts products for only $10 each after instant savings. Choose from Scotts Lawn Food, Easy Seed, Ortho Home Defense, Roundup Pump and Go, and more. All just $10 each. Hurry into your local Ace, where top Scotts products are $10 each after instant savings. Through Monday only. Valid on select items and sizes for Ace Rewards members. Limit 2. See participating store for details.
Feed me more.
Welcome to Conversation with the Big Guy. I am the Big Guy Ryback, and I'm sitting here with the one, Pat Buck.
And we're here live, or not so live. Someone keeps calling me on my goddamn cell phone. I mean, I didn't start at the time. I get a little worried. I see unknown, and it's either, but it's late, though. So I
used to get, though, it used to be usually WWE. They tell you when you get fired, it comes from an unknown.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I keep thinking it's my dad.
Not that from my first round. Yeah, Jesus. In developmental, but it's a different story.
Well, first off, we're going to be professional podcasters, and we're going to plug the podcast that you're listening to already. But please, there's a lot of listens here. We're very thankful that you guys listen to this piece of shit. But
Thank you. Please
leave your comments, your reviews, your wherever it's Audio Boom or it's iTunes or if it's Stitcher or whatever it is. We're not on SoundCloud anymore because we're
not through Audio Boom, right?
We are through Audio Boom, helping us get a little more exposure, helping us reach a higher platform, and it's a great system. So
it's kind of cool, right? I mean, that they do the Bischoff podcast and the Ric Flair podcast, right?
Yeah, they're just a nice little platform that we're doing this basically on our own dime. I mean, podcasts are free. I mean, this equipment luckily was
the wine cost a little bit.
The wine cost, what'd you pay? $15 for this giant piece of.
I told you, I thought I bought the $70 bottle. I got to the register and was pleasantly surprised that it was only $14.99 for this beautiful blend of Cavit.
And I brought my own
blend.
Gentleman's collection here. Wine. Because we thought about doing this podcast sober. Because we have a big weekend ahead. We have
Absolutely.
A huge weekend of wrestling, and it's Thursday night, and we're like, nah, let's just drink.
I told you, I go, and again, I could justify having some drinks with red wine. And
Is there a benefit? Explain.
There is a benefit, and I talk about it in the book, but it's up to like 10 ounces. A glass of wine is not a lot.
Okay.
We all, and most people overdrink, but I have found there's a lot of benefits to red wine. And there was a book, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but they go into depth about it and just all the health benefits and just from the brain, and it burns body fat. And again, that's up to a certain point. When you overindulge in it, you obviously lose some of that. But you know, like when guys drink too much, like Jack, and you hear like the term whiskey dick. And like,
yes.
Red wine is.
Heard it. I lived it for five and a half years.
Every guy is, yeah. Goddamn Jack, which could only use that as an excuse so many times. But red wine, drunk, you know, when it's drank within reason, supposedly doesn't have those effects. It actually enhances those effects of positive effects, and it actually is used for intimate moments, and that's where the health benefits and everything always kind of came from. But I talk about it in depth, and it supposedly, though, is when, you know, drunk within reason, it helps burn, like, something with the brown fat tissue, adipose fat tissue.
I didn't even know there was.
I've gone over it, and I got to, like, look at my notes on it, and it's, the research on it's pretty cool. And again, but a lot of people overindulge in it, but you're better off if you're going to drinking red wine than anything else.
Really? No white wine?
White's not included in that, but I think though, you know, women like white wine. I've noticed.
I like white wine.
And Pat Buck. But it's compared, and I always say, kind of remember my mom told me when I was younger, and it's kind of, she goes, if you're ever going to drink, you're better off doing beer or wine over hard liquor, because that stuff's just harder on your body in general.
Sure.
And you could kind of, it takes a lot for most people to get really messed up on it. So where we could sip this all throughout the night and I'll be totally fine. And
speak for you. I don't know. About two glasses in, then I start feeling red's a little heavy. I think the blood of Christ really gets
it helps me sleep. That's actually one of the benefits of it too, is it having one to two glasses a night. It will relax you, and you'll notice about 45 minutes to an hour in,
it
calms you, and you have a great night's rest. So like when you can drink it, really, and again, part of drinking it is not drinking it to get drunk. It's drinking it like it's almost like a supplement, so to speak.
And it's also, you do too much, I think there's nothing worse than a wine hangover. It's probably the fucking worst hangover you could have, that you had at my wedding.
That night was, by the way, I was going to tell about a moment me and Dolph went out with the AVN porn stars in Vegas and everyone was drinking red wine because I was drinking red wine. It's so good for you. And then I'm drunk telling everyone how good it is for you, but drinking 30 glasses of it throughout the night. And
like Andre the Giant.
I Ubered down there to meet them. By the way, we got to get our plugs in for this, but we'll get there eventually. I Ubered down there to hang out with Dolph because every time he's in Vegas, and this is when I was still with WWE, like just never kind of could line up, and I'm always like busy. You're only home a day and a half, and he said screw it, and finally went out and drank red wine all night and had a great time. And I drank so much red wine, I think it relaxed me so much I had to get out of there. I had to shit so bad. And we're all hanging out at the bar afterwards, and my stomach, and like I had to get like, I was like so bad. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go to the restroom there, and I Ubered back home and probably took the largest shit of my life. Sorry if anyone's listening out there that was there that night.
Wine was, growing up, we weren't going to fucking talk about wine, but might as well. I remember growing up, I would always try wine at different points. I never understood it. I think you had to be a little bit older and a little more mature to really kind of... I was a beer person, I was a Jack Daniels person, but in my early 30s, I feel like, God, I love wine. I love it every day. I don't do it every day, but...
I think as you mature, it's one of those things that you kind of just... comes with age.
Comes with every dinner. You got to have like a nice bottle of wine, you know.
It's fun when you're younger, though. When we're back in our Sully days in Louisville, where you just go and get fucked up. But you're just ruined the night. But like, you wake up and you go about your day.
You could bounce back from the hangovers. Like back then, dude, I really remember we talked about this on a past episode, taking fucking people's tequila sunrises, chugging them down. Yeah. Oh, it's a vodka soda. Oh, who gives a shit? Oh, Jack and Coke, mixing them up. You know, the hangover would be a little bit, but you get by it. Now it's like, I find in my old age of 32, I have to like stick to one thing or I'm fucked.
I'm the same way. And there's a huge difference from when you're in your 20s to when you get in your 30s. And like, I still tell myself I'm young at heart and I feel amazing. But there is a huge, I used to sit there in my, I'll never forget like Charles the Hammer Evans from OVW.
Oh shit.
He was always older than everybody.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Down there, and I always remember him at the Fitness Factory, I think was the gym, he'd be stretching for like 30 or 40 minutes before doing weight, and I'm in like young 20s, and I'm just like, God, what the fuck is he stretching for? Like, that's God, what a waste of time. Mm-hmm. And then they're just throwing heavy weights around and killing my joints and tendons, and now that I'm getting to live with, and now I'm that guy stretching for 30 and 40 minutes.
I saw you today. I was on the treadmill. I was 27 minutes in. I'm like, he hasn't even started yet.
No, I was there for over 3 hours tonight. Yeah. Like, it's I go through a whole routine, especially, and that's what I'm excited about the wrestling here, is because on days that I work, it's like I go through a whole routine to like make sure that I'm limber and like it'll last the whole day for me. Like when I get loose, like
how long do you stretch for?
It'll be, tomorrow's going to be a good 40-minute session, like Jesus, before I ever touch a weight, and like that's active warm ups, and then. And then stretch where I'll try to push myself tomorrow. And like, I haven't done this since I've been out the last 5 months.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been wrestling. So I still do my regular stretching, but this is now, I'm excited, man. I just love the whole process for me.
And I think the last time we recorded, we were kind of saying it's your first day back at school, meaning like, you know, you're on the independence. But I think actually this weekend is probably because you're wrestling.
This is like the return of the big guy Ryback this weekend.
You know, we got a big tag team match tomorrow night that I selfishly booked myself in.
By the time we're listening to this, we will be the tag team champions. Spoiler alert.
You know, for years I prided myself on not being the guy that, you know, but I'm telling the guys, I'm like, look, we're gonna win these titles. Exposure wise, it makes sense. And then, Yeah, whatever. So we're in the fucking.
I've already instructed you. I want every title of every promotion so I can go do photo ops having 30 fucking titles.
That like Ultimo Dragon.
Feed me more titles. That's going to be my indie run.
That has been the talk with a lot of places where, you know, the booking, which has been relatively easy. And so far, I think you've had a pretty great schedule with the bookings.
Oh, the signing. Yeah, no, you've done a phenomenal job.
You must have a hell of an agent.
I'm shocked more guys have not come to you like you. And I hope you turn them down so you can focus solely on me and what we got going on. But well,
if there's any, you know, I tell Broski all the time when he's ready to or when he gets fired, I'll be his. I'll hook him up a little bit.
He's stolen my weight belt, which is actually you're the one that actually I should give you. If anyone's ever given you any slack over wearing the weight belt, you're the one that started that whole thing.
If we're talking about plugs, we should give our buddy JD Michaels,
yeah, Iron Attitude.
I'll say this one time. Look,
I talk to JD all the time. I love him, man.
JD's great, but he was a great gear maker because in wrestling, it's really hard to find.
Still does my gear to this day.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Okay. So
he does my singlets. And this is a true story. WWE. The seamstresses up there, when I got up there, I was having them do the singlets because JD was kind of already transitioning away from it. And they, like everything else, like they have their people they do their stuff for. And like I was paying them well and tipping them well. And like I remember there was a pay-per-view. It was like 3 weeks away. And like, yeah, we're not going to be able to have your singlet. It was the first. I would try to do a new singlet every pay-per-view I did.
Yeah.
And it's one a month.
It's not a lot of work.
And at that time, it was one color. It was very simple. And the girl that was doing them, she's like, yeah, I can't get it for you. And I was just like, what? And, yeah. And I was being, you know, used in that fashion and on TV every week. And I just said, fuck this. And I called JD and I've been with him ever since. And
so he's our buddy and we always got along. He's a former partner of mine. And we've always, all three of us are very like-minded. Great worker. Awesome person, and he was so talented at gear making, and he probably should have had a job just from that alone, but
easily
he migrated into making the weight belts that I think most people have seen you wear.
Yeah,
that actually
was a gift from you.
It was
big birthday gift.
I saw them. I was like, oh my god, Macho used to wear one, Hogan used to wear one,
and that was kind of it.
Yeah, so I have this theory too. I'm a gear mark. I think we're both gear marks, but I was like, you know what? Instead of wearing, I'm like, I'm going to get older eventually, and I'm going to get probably fatter and sloppier. Who knows? Everyone doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll be like Macho Man, where he hits like, you know, he got into his peak conditioning when he was like 45.
Yeah, he he looked insane there in Spider-Man.
WCW in 2002.
Yeah, I loved that his theme music back then too. By the way,
what's up, Macho?
Yeah, with Gorgeous George, man.
So.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So I saw that look. I'm like, oh, fuck. I want that look. And then I saw JD was making weight belts. I'm like, dude, I can wrestle in these. He's like, they might get in the way. And, you know, I don't know if you could wear them for wrestling. But no. So got them made.
Yeah.
Wrestled in them, which it's very tough to wrestle in them. With first I was wearing it with long tights, and that was kind
of
bad.
I'm a big fan of your look that you have going on now, by the way.
Thanks. And that's by design, so I can let myself go when I'm, you know, still doing these shitty independents when I'm 45.
Yeah.
But then I was like, let me do the bone saw kind of look and the weight belts, and that keeps everything together. And then I was like, you know what? I kept telling you about
the
weight
belts.
You got
the Bret Hart kind of look too, right? And like, yeah.
And just, it fits my body type, whatever. But I remember telling you about them, and you weren't really like, oh, you're like, okay. I'm like, no, you'll like these weight belts.
Yeah.
And I think you blew it off. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. So I had one made for you on your birthday, and I remember, I think you got back from the European tour. You're like, what the fuck is this? You're like,
I loved it instantly. Yeah. And like, it was, and you had the big guy on it. I still have that one in my gym. I use at home when I'm not doing like my heavyweight belt, when I'm doing like squats and deadlifts, but it, those things are quality. And, but I wasn't allowed. I started working in it towards the end up there. They would tell me to take it off for matches.
Why?
And I, the psychology wise, you would want the weight doing all these power moves. I would want to be wearing the weight belt to hold myself together during these matches where I'm picking up Big Show, Mark Henry, Kane, and shit, every other guy over 300, 400, 500 pounds. And no, I wear it to the ring and then take it off and work without it, then throw my back out every night.
Do you prefer to wear it or not wear it?
Oh, I love wearing
it.
You
like wearing it?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was one time I had a segment where I think the Authority, this was like I came back from the groin injury and was back babyface, and I was wearing it out there, and like the J&J security and Hunter was out there, and they were beating me down.
Okay.
And I thought they were going to take it off of me and start whipping me with it,
which
would have been a great heat. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, please don't take this off. This is going to suck. But they didn't. But yeah.
My last match with Cody, which was the main event in Rahway, the town we're recording in, he took it off me and whipped me during the match.
They're heavy, man.
Fucking hurts, dude.
Yeah,
it hurts bad. But
that last match I had with Kalisto, the pre-show stopper weight belt, which gets a lot of
which also was a great idea. I don't know who thought of that one.
Was again Pat Buck's idea. Very creative young man. And they were so furious with that weight belt.
What, pre-show stopper?
They were so bad. Cohn kept telling me, they go, take off the weight belt. And I kept saying, tell him to fuck off. And during the match, I was already checked out. I was gone. And I was like, I'm going to have fun one way or the other. But they ended up, kept telling us, I had to cut out. Like Cohn kept saying, he goes, no more CM Punk stuff, no more CM Punk stuff. And I had I was going to do the running knee into the GTS.
Yeah.
And like not cover them, and like just to really, because they were eating it up.
Sure.
But we got cut on time as always. And
so fucking crazy.
That's one thing I always had to respect to the other guys. On that match, you got to get off the air by a certain time so the show can go on.
Yeah.
You know, so then that's being selfish at that point. But
and that was that the Mania? Was that where you almost, you saved his life pretty much?
No, that was Mania where, yeah, everyone says that. I just was.
That was a big thing. Like, he looked like he was going to die.
Again, I said anybody would have done the same thing when you're out. Like, and I just, it's, we've all done stuff out there. And those ropes, and in the heat of the moment, you're sweaty and.
Yeah.
But Kalisto's amazing. There's nothing he can't do. And again, it's like a high risk thing. When you're going out there, you're doing all these high risk moves 4 to 5 nights a week, you're going to mess up sometimes.
Sure.
Like, I've seen him nail that, you know.
No, he's so super talented.
10 out of 10 times. And then he did it one other time, and it just so happened, you know, I think he was falling short and just doing my job. That's what we do. So, that was Payback, though, the last one in Chicago, which was very fitting for my last match before.
That was your last match?
Last match.
Okay, wow.
Which everyone, I got a lot of, you know, great feedback. And it always bothered me. Everyone's like, that was your best match. It was like, I've been doing that for years on the live events and with different guys. And, like, it's just TV weren't allowed the same, you know, opportunities. So,
and I think the match, I mean, you probably have more fun wrestling. Not that it's not fun. Do you have more fun wrestling guys that are kind of a smaller body type to have better, like a better mix, or would you rather go again? Because for a while you were just paired up with giant after giant,
which is tough.
Which is like tough.
And nothing against. So it's, those were always my least favorite from a standpoint of, whenever you, because it's a clash of styles a little bit, and there's only so much you could do to certain guys, and it's. Like, they've seen me pick up guys like Big Show and Mark Henry and Kane before. So then once you're past that wow factor on that, it kind of, and they're at a stage of their careers where they're not, they're just, look how big they are. Like, they shouldn't be getting thrown around anyways.
No.
Like, even doesn't matter how strong I am. Like, so, and it's just, it's.
And to give them credit, they're, for their size, especially Big Show, they do tremendous fucking things.
People, and like, don't give them enough credit.
Not at all.
And it's, and to be in it as long as they have and still going. And now they're kind of, and Big Show's finally being used now, I feel, appropriately, where if there's nothing for him on TV,
take him off TV,
take him off TV and bring him back as an attraction. It's like, it's so simple. And Mark Henry's not just being thrown in onto TV to be thrown onto TV to do a job to somebody. Like, when there's no, like, when guys are that big, just protect them.
Yeah.
Like, and then when they do put somebody over, it has meaning rather than just whore it out and then use them as one of their, you know, regular guys. So
we had ideas to start talking about things on this podcast. We didn't even plug anything, I don't think.
I think we should get to that.
But,
the following advertisement has been paid for by the big guy. Are you hungry?
I thought you were going to read your Pollo Loco.
I was going to. Guys, if you're hungry, go to a Pollo Loco. The big guy's a big, big advocate of their food. And I desperately need their stock to go back up. Their stock has dropped tremendously over the last year and a half.
Okay. Being your manager, if you will, and line of bookings through, we've filled up through January, but we even have a couple past January. We have some into April already.
Yeah.
But one that you're adamant on, this actually came.
I wrote the commercial for you to send to them.
And I said, no, let me talk to them first. So,
the incredible big guy commercial.
Fuck. So you have this love for this company.
Yes. With a passion.
And you eat there all the time.
Every day.
I did hear you on a Voxer, because I think you recorded it, yelling at the fast food guy.
Yeah, I had to go into the store because the location by me on North Decatur in Las Vegas, if you're listening, anyone from El Pollo Loco, you might want to send someone in there to tighten that ship up a little bit. I've noticed over the last couple months that the service there has not been as good as it had been, and my order has been getting messed up, and I go there every day and get the same thing. And there were a new staff of guys working there, which I happen to be voxing you when they go, "Hey, Rayback. And I go, "It's Rayback. Hey, guys." And I was on the phone. And but they when they took my order, I said no sour cream on the chicken fajita burritos. And I get them on wheat tortillas. And so, because the sour cream is the only thing that's fattening in them. Outside of that, there's nothing
in them. So you don't eat sour cream?
No, because when I have my carb meals, I try to keep my fats as low as possible.
Oh, okay, I understand.
Which we'll get into more on that. But they... So, and they go, "No sour cream." I go, "No sour cream." Like, they confirmed it with me.
So you guys had a mutual understanding. Yeah. There'd be no sour cream in this meal.
Fast food, I thought I was perfectly safe world. But
no matter what else happens,
it was
no
confirmed
sour cream.
To me, so, and then I got a chicken enchilada meal that has this sauce on it. You need a fork and a knife to eat. You can't eat it. And there's rice. There's you can't eat it without silverware. And, I was in a hurry to go to my boxing class, so I had to eat. I was going to go in and eat. I was like, "Oh, I'll just eat in the car." And I get in the parking lot and open up the food, and there's no napkins. I'm like, and I start eating the burrito, and sour cream is dripping everywhere. They put extra sour cream on it. So now, I'm furious. And I go, "You know what? I'm going to do an extra round of boxing tonight. I'll burn off the sour cream."
Sure.
So I eat the two burritos. Literally sauce all over my face, and so I go in the bag to eat the chicken enchiladas real quick, and there's no silverware. So I just go, "Fuck," pull the car up, I go in, turn on Voxer so you could hear me. I talk to the manager, and I'm just like, "Come on, you guys are better than this." And the guys, and I looked at the guys, and I'm not gonna sit there and scream. I just go, come on guys, you're better than this. And I got my silverware, I got my napkins, and they've not messed up since.
You know, I was just thinking, just like we put my car crash at the end of this show, I have Voxer Pro. I'm actually paying the money to have the full unlimited stuff.
Yeah, you probably have message saved.
I have that saved. We could do the...
I drop a couple F-bombs in there, but
it's
within...
We could bleep them out.
Yeah,
We've been doing your fucking promos for these...
You're a big fan of those cardboard cutout promos.
Let's go into this whole... Since booking you. Okay, so anyway, or representing your bookings. It's been pretty easy because you're fucking self-reliant, self-sufficient. I talk to these promoters. I know the game. But you're like, "Pollo Loco, man. I want to do something big with them." I'm like, "All right, let me write them a line." And I did this while you were still with WWE.
Yeah.
And they wrote back, "We're interested." And there's a bunch of corporate yada, yada, yada. And then once you walked away, they wrote to us.
Yeah.
And they're like, "We want to do something." And I'm like, "Okay, what do you want to do?" And it basically, all they wanted to do was an appearance at their store, give away free autographs, and you to take over their Instagram.
Yeah.
But the amount of fucking work that went into this, it was like they were planning WrestleMania.
Really?
Dude, you know this. They were like, first...
I'm trying to play dumb.
It's very good. Those acting classes are paying off. Dude, they were like, "Okay, what does he want to do here?" I'm like, "It's an appearance. He will sign autographs. Can you
I had to, by the way, tell you to tell them to get autograph mats because they like had they didn't.
Before that, what about the pictures?
Yeah, yeah.
So here's the thing. They go, okay, what do you guys want us to do? I go, here's what I envision. You know, you guys want to do the social media. First off, you were like, hey, let me put a cardboard cutout in the store to advertise, which I'm like.
So people come into the store, those are such an easy sell.
From my business standpoint, the fact that a talent wants to actually take a cardboard cutout of himself and actually help with the advertising of event speaks wonders.
You will not find a guy that will want to do more to promote and to just work.
Which is why you should hit up bookthebigguy@yahoo.com and talk to us about bookings. But anyway, so you say that and I go, this is what we want to do. You know, put the cardboard cut it up, advertise, have a table,
all the information there, right?
Have a table there, you know, an autograph signing. Won't even charge for that, which normally people charge. Yeah. He'll sign autographs, he'll take pictures. They're like,
you know what, by the way, speaking of that, for some of these people that don't understand that, because with social media you get real dickheads on there that are just clueless lost souls. That always like make like
the price,
they like not the price, but see, all I do is there's an appearance fee for me to go somewhere.
Yeah,
I get paid my appearance fee, mm-hmm. and then the people that are paying that fee, they make their money back through the pictures and autographs.
Yes,
and so they make money by booking me,
which is exactly what I'm. Literally, I have a stack of money like fucking Pablo Escobar in my house that I'm handing you this weekend.
Yeah,
which is a healthy fucking literally stack of like a really good chunk of change. And I have you, and whatever comes in from that, that's on my responsibility as a promoter to make sure those people know you're being there for me to make more of that money that I'm actually paying you.
Yeah.
So that's the whole name of the
but
game.
It's not me charging the money for it.
You're not getting extra.
It just blows me away. People are just ignorant, and they don't. I'm just like, God.
So that's the way the game works. And I think a lot of people don't really understand that. So back to Pollo Loco. So like you're like, hey, I want to do a cardboard cutout and pictures. And they're like, well, let's ask the restaurant if we can get this cardboard cutout out. And I'm like, why? Like, who gives a who cares? Like, it's no big deal. And they're like, oh, we can't do that. Okay. They're like, what kind of pictures are you going to give away? I'm like, I don't know. I have like a couple of your non-WWE stuff on my computer. I'm like, here's two images. And they're like, I guess they're menacing images. You're just like with your fists up or just like whatever.
I wasn't smiling, supposedly.
And they wrote back, we can't use these. Can we pick an image where he's smiling? And I'm like,
I have everything. So we gave him the images smiling, right?
I go, pick whatever ones you want. Go to the website, pick them out. And then they ended up picking out
the menacing one.
The one I fucking sent in the first place.
Which was when I realized, I just told you, I go, they have no clue about it. But I had a lot of fun over there. And the girls that were there from El Pollo Loco, they did a really good job. And we had a great turnout. And there were people there the entire 3 hours. And I thoroughly enjoy them. I told you, I've been, interested in attaching the Feed Me More to a food brand.
Like a Macho Man to a Slim Jim.
Yeah. And it's a layup. And it's an easy sell. But I'm very selective on that. I'm not just going to go. When I go, El Pollo Loco gets first dibs.
How much stock do you own in that company?
I own a lot. they've paid for a lot of things for me over the years. And but they crashed after their initial IPO, initial price offering. And they're being looked into, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if anything came about of it, but they've dropped like between $10 and $15 or $12 and $15 per share, which is a lot.
Yeah. I think people are kind of blown away that you're on the stock market.
Yeah. Oh, I've told you, like, I don't talk to a lot of people, but I tell you, I toot my own horn a little bit on some of my successes.
The promoter game, and I may know, we're all deep in rest, but when you talk about the stock stuff, I actually do get insanely jealous that I'm not involved, and you're telling me, I did this today, I made this one I'm keeping my eye on. I'm like, fuck, like, I feel like wrestlers and stock market outside of, you've heard of JBL with stuff like
Kane's
that.
Kane's very good also. Kane too? I don't know if he's, how big he is into investing, but I know he's very knowledgeable on there's been a few times me and him talked, and it always pops me to the big guy and Kane talking about gold. And Daniel Bryan is very intelligent with all that. But
oh, really?
A lot of it too with stocks is overcoming your fear of watching your money fluctuate.
Most people won't have that patience.
No, and it that was my biggest fear. I took 2 years before I ever started doing anything with my money in WWE. But when I kind of saw the writing on the wall early on, I was like, it's up to me to figure out what I'm doing with this. And I don't want to just put my money in a bank and have them just rely on somebody else to do it for me. I've always been very big on being hands-on. And I was like, if I fail, I can live with myself losing my money rather than somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a lot of success with it, and I've never put anything into there that I need. Like, whereas, like, I don't put my life savings into the stock market.
Okay.
But I have a healthy amount in there, and I have enough where it has given me some serious leverage, where I'm able to make a lot of money in there with the money that I have in. But I don't need that money, so when my stocks are down, I've been down a lot at points, and I just laugh, and like, because I'm not. I don't need
You're
that money.
You're not attached to it.
I'm not attached to that money. Whereas if I needed that money tomorrow for a surgery or to pay my mortgage or, you know what I mean?
Or massage parlor or something.
Which we'll get into. Not currently, but years past. This was supposed to be about drugs and addictions and whatnot.
We're talking about stocks.
Yeah. Have we done the plugs for the show yet?
No. We just
All right. I was going to do the El Pollo Loco one, and you ridiculed me for it. Feedmemore.com, the big guy Ryback22 on Instagram, Ryback22 on Twitter, and Ryback247 on Snapchat if you want to get a few laughs and a little insight into the big guy Ryback's life.
And I'm Buck Never Stops across all platforms. Me and my 10,000 followers really, really, really killing it on the old Twitter.
You accused me of buying followers on Twitter today.
No, I asked you because I saw a couple mean tweets towards you saying things.
Which I've never even seen.
Really?
And yeah.
I check it now because of this horrible show.
I told you on the record, if I could find out how to buy followers, I probably totally would.
Yeah.
Why not?
No, I did not accuse you. I was like, did you ever buy anything? Because you had a lot. I mean, you have a fucking healthy following.
That just slowed down. Twitter's slowed down in general, I've noticed over the years.
It's more about Snapchat.
Yeah. But I got all those really quick from that first 2 years in WWE. That's where the majority of those all came from.
First two? Yip Yip Yip? Era?
No. Yeah, God, I think Skip Sheffield maxed out at maybe 20,000 tops. The rest has been from Ryback.
Okay.
And which I always laugh at. Like, you look at the guys that they have pushed heavily over the last few years, and I was just like, they've been up there the same amount of time as me, and they're still not the same
followers.
Amount. But my following has slowed down over the last couple of years since they have, worked their magic.
Yeah.
But I will rebuild all of that, and just that's what people are getting to look into the life of what I'm really like, and it's been positive. So.
Well, before we're not even going to go into topics. I mean, you're here now. We got a big wrestling weekend ahead of you.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, he's declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I mean, I don't even know where to start with that. Are you nervous at all?
Not at all.
No?
I was talking to somebody within the WWE empire, as I have friends within the office in there, and they were asking me, they go, are you nervous at all? And I go, no. I go, I was out for a year and a half with the ankle deal and didn't wrestle a match and went right back on the road working 10-minute matches on live events with a fucked up ankle with my balance all screwed up. Which a true story on all that. A lot of people, I remember Val Venus, I remember at a live event, which has never seemed to have anything nice to say online.
What was it?
Something weird, but I blocked him a long time ago.
Okay.
I don't even, it's not
oh,
even.
Oh, no. It's when you spoke out with the boys and he's yeah, Mr.
He completely interpreted that entire thing. But he was always really nice at the shows when I'd met him and took
very
pictures
nice.
With his daughter.
Yeah.
And
I think he's one of those guys that is online. Persona does not relate to the person you meet. When you meet him, he's very pleasant,
yeah,
very nice.
Like, beyond nice. And then I saw what he did, and I was just like, ah, come on, that's shitty, man.
He also smokes a lot of weed, so you don't know what kind of mood you caught him. He owns like a dispensary. That's his thing.
Yeah.
Because I know he doesn't
maybe
like
he had some bad weed or something.
I've been on shows with him before where this is pretty wild. It's me and I won't mention the other person. We're on a show with him. He didn't have his gear because he sold all his gear. And he had to like go to Walmart and bought fight pants. I know he's like heavily into the pot game and stuff like that. And like, maybe he's doing well for himself. Maybe he's not. I don't know enough. But like, I was like, come on, man. You're the Valboski. Give us the fucking purple trunks, man. Not these fucking fight shorts. But Yeah, that's my only experience with him, really.
But he, I remember he told me on one of the meetings, he was like, I really hated when you would do that little march before the shell shock, when I would do the march.
That's the most over thing.
That was, kids, I can't, and the reason why, but I was going to tell you where that came from.
And who named that? That's another genius there.
By the way, the backpack stunner, the over-the-shoulder boulder holder, you gave me my finish to Skip Sheffield.
Yes.
Like there was, which has fucked up my back tremendously, thank you.
And other people's.
But that march, the reason why I started doing that is because my ankle, when I got back on the road, I had no business coming back to wrestling when I did.
Okay.
My ankle was a mess. I had no balance in my left ankle. My strength, I was like a feeble kitten. And I was so I was picking guys up for that finish, and I noticed my balance was so off, I didn't want people seeing me stumbling around.
Really?
So when I did it, I started marching to shift my weight back and forth.
Really?
And push off my foot so that you wouldn't notice how unstable I was.
Wow.
And that was the only reason I ever started doing that, which is why I eventually, once my ankle started, strength started coming back in it as I was up there, I just quit doing it eventually, unless they would ask me to do it here and there.
Yeah.
But I had no idea that was going to, that got over with the kids really well.
That got over with me. Because, because here's the thing. When I thought of the name Shell Shock, because you're like, I need a name for my finish.
Yeah.
And some people were like, oh, is that turtle? I'm like, no, Shell Shock. I was trying to think of
it's battle fatigue when you're in war.
Exactly. Yeah. It's an older term. And immediately I thought, hey, Vince might relate to this because it's what this is.
Because he's old?
Because Shell Shock. I know what that is.
Oh, Shell Shock. God. Damn it, Shell Shock.
Just lifts those big guys on his shoulders.
So strong.
So I was like, PTSD.
Right back.
Used to be Shell. I'm like, before it was PTSD, it was Shell Shock. I'm like, oh, fuck, that sounds like you went through some sort of traumatic thing. And then I thought you added military stuff to the march and the Shell Shock. I'm like, I thought you were just being creative.
Yeah.
But I thought that was fun.
Did I ever tell you? Thank you. The time I had to explain why I do my entrance to Vince, did we ever talk about that?
I don't think so. I think I've heard it before, but
Kidman was like, he came in, he was like, Vince wants to know why you do your fucking entrance. Mm. And I go, the energy entrance? And he goes, what? Kidman's he's a smart ass. And
Kidman's awesome.
I love him.
I love Kidman.
He's the one that told me, he's like, when you leave, I talked to him the day that I left. He goes, just, don't burn your bridge with the company. Don't say anything bad about him. And he goes, you'll be back in 6 months. And I go, oh, fuck that.
Well, nine episodes later.
I've told everyone I'm very thankful for everything. So, but I'm not going to not fucking talk about things. I've had to live with it for so long. This is therapy for myself. But I had to explain to Vince why I come out and do the entrance with the one arm up, the other arm up, mm-hmm. both arms up three times. And then, boom, it is me. That is an entrance of energy of when I come out and this was my babyface entrance. I collect the energy on the left side, collect the energy on the right side, collect the energy of the entire arena over and over, and inject it into myself was the legitimate, and then I shut down, take over, and now that I am living through the energy of the people. That is a deep secret, thing of why most people don't understand why I ever did that. That was well thought out, and I would legitimately get hyped up when I did it, and it was, I live through energy and feed off the energy, but I had to explain that to him and he was totally cool with it. But he wanted to know early on, why the hell are you doing that?
I thought you got it from Kickboxer.
No.
No,
that was the Feed Me More taunt. The first couple, I was after the matches and early on with the locals, I was just doing the up and down thing with the arms.
Yes.
And it looked like the old Hasbro action figures. I didn't use Feed Me More yet at that point. And because I didn't want to say that yet. And just then it timed all out and I said it once and I was like, you know what? This is going to stick. I never thought that would get over.
It was organic. I mean,
yeah.
Shit like that. There's things in wrestling that just get, you never think that just catch on. And
I didn't think it would.
Yeah.
I mean, and it did. So you want to get some questions here?
Yeah, let's do that. We were going to, dude, it's so funny because we talk about this podcast nonstop and we're like, let's
take
plan.
We take notes.
This show, let's just talk about this. And then we get on the show and we're just bumbling.
Our best work is when we just kind of bounce off of each other and stories come naturally. It's better though when I hated our last round of podcast episodes that I thought we both were very tired. And
our last two, we were really tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was just dead. in Philadelphia, like dark hotel room. Like this is lighted. It's hot as fucking here right now, but
it is really hot. I'm sweating profusely.
After this episode, I will turn the air on a little higher.
I remember I wrestled a match that you didn't even watch. I thought I was dying that day.
You wanted me to watch your match. And I hadn't seen Santino in a while. And we get to talking.
And he'll be here tomorrow.
And I'll probably miss my match talking to him.
I'll just wrestle.
He's like me. I feel like he's a chatty Cathy too when you get to talking.
And he's also one of, honestly, I think top five favorite people I've ever met in wrestling, because he's always been positive and like a mentally strong dude and always been a good person.
He lives the secret without even knowing it.
Like, exactly what I was going to say. Speaking of secret, we've never said this on the podcast and the wine's taking control of my voice, but we're actually in the new secret book that it's been released already. It came out on October 4th, which was like,
I never got a copy of that, by the way.
They sent it to you. They sent it to me, and they also paid me for it. No, they sent it to your P.O. box. Have you sent that in a while?
I go check my P.O. box 2-3 times a week.
I could have sworn they sent
It'll come in.
It's at my house. So, like, I mean, it's your story, but the fact that it coincides.
You lived it with me, though. You had your own story at
to
the
see,
time.
Just to see, like, you know, hey, fuck, both of our names are in this book that literally fucking changed our lives.
10 years ago, we had nothing, and it was living together, and now 10 years later we're doing this and we're working together, and we are the featured story at the end of the book for their celebrity portion.
Did you see what they retweeted too? I thought this was kind of cool.
Oh yeah.
So I put a tweet out there and I was like, you know, this came out really mind-blowing, and they wrote back, we're not supposed to play favorites, but this is our favorite story in the book. I was like, fuck, man, this book that like was a national, you know, not even national, just a well-renowned thing.
The book it had worldwide. Huge press. Oprah, it's been
everywhere,
you know, promoted heavily.
And it's,
but it's, and a lot of people, you know, Rhonda Byrne, she's amazing. She's gathered this information. This isn't anything new that she created. She's done the research on this and brought together all these minds of people that have lived this life. And it's just a mindset, and it quite simply is nothing more than just choosing to have a positive mindset.
And it just made sense to me, because all the people I knew that were really fucking miserable and sad, and I was that.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, always deep, and I'm like, fuck, bad shit always happens to them. People who just seem like they have it made, or like everything's great and genuinely things are good. I'm like, nothing bad really happens. It was just, it made a lot of sense to me, and I just, it's pretty mind-blowing to go, oh, fuck.
It's How the Secret Changed My Life, I believe, is the name of the book.
How the Secret Changed My Life, yeah. And it's all stories about people all over the world.
It's available on Amazon and in probably every bookstore and online Kindle, everything, I believe.
So go check that out if you want to, you know.
Or just go to the bookstore and read our section of it.
And then put the book back, buy a PWI magazine, and then
by the way, that German company sent an email to me, which I forwarded to you, about being on their cover.
I didn't reply.
For the German pro wrestling magazine, which I heavily wanted. They asked me if they wanted to do a cover story or a story on me. And I go, sure, it's got to be on the cover. They go, yeah, why not?
The booking emails, once we get through things, like, hey, can I win your title? Or can I be on the cover of your magazine?
You never know unless you ask. That's what I always tell people.
And I've said that before too. And I'm like, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's a lot of bookings you have coming up where I know they're going to run with it, and it's more exposure for the company. I've done it before.
Yeah.
When Matt Hardy was, and actually he is one of the most over guys in wrestling.
Absolutely.
Now.
I don't even know him that well.
But. Independent title. You're working him fucking, I think, a couple
WrestleCade.
Weeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
I put the title on him, and it was just like, it's very good exposure, and then it could also help build the local guy. It's just very good stuff. So
when I've done my signings and some of these signings, he's always right next to me, and I just thoroughly appreciate him being in character.
He's great. He's awesome.
And I could listen to him talk all day, and it reminds me of when I had fun as Skip Sheffield, except for this is way cooler.
I gotta say
that, where you just don't give a shit and you can just say, you can literally do no wrong.
Yeah.
And like, there's, and then it's, I was just like, man, that is incredible. He's been around for how long now? And like, he's the hottest thing right now. By far.
And you can both see myself and Ryback and the Broken Hardys next month, November 19th.
Taking them on.
We're going to team with them.
Yeah, 8-man tag.
A big Survivor Series style match.
I'm even cooler with that. I would much rather tag with them. Am I going to come as Skip Sheffield for that one?
I fucking hope so.
I think I'm going to bust out the Skip Sheffield
I would be
Strut
fine
Splash, which was always a favorite. Wade Barrett's dad, I was one of his favorites.
Wade Barrett's dad.
Kofi Kingston, myself, and somebody else. Razor Ramon, or Wade Barrett's dad's three favorite. Stu Bennett, I should say, his dad's favorite wrestlers of all time. He loved when I did the little strut up the steps. And it would,
really?
Oh, yeah, he loved... That character, man, was so much fun.
It's our favorite because we always thought about horrible things that would happen to
Adolph Sheffield, I think, was one of your...
That was his... That's when he loses his mind. That's when he becomes, you know... Yeah.
That would be my backup plan. If I ever went into MMA and just totally pulled a CM Punk and got my ass kicked, I would just come back
as Skip Sheffield. Makes total sense.
My mind's fucked up. And then I opening match, sell some merchandise. Yep. What it do? Fucking
start
the match. Shoulder boulder holder here and there. And fucking
start the match with a running drop kick that you miss.
I used to do that in FCW.
I remember that.
I got that from an MMA guy that was, I believe, mentally handicapped, that had a fight that would start his fights off.
What was that guy's name? Because I remember we'd laugh about this.
He like started an MMA fight off with a running drop kick and missed and got like choked out instantly. And it was the greatest thing.
But I remember a couple of shows, because this is when I was refereeing. You're like, I'm going to do this tonight. I'm like, no, you're fucking not. And I remember ding, 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 and you run at the guy.
By the way, the Cruiserweight Classic, they've started matches with that. Somebody's obviously been studying Finn Skip Sheffield matches.
Finn Balor starts with that all the time.
Yeah.
Run, drop kick.
Spoiler alert, Finn Balor is a huge Skip Sheffield fucking mark.
Fuck. Oh my God.
Do you want to do a few questions here?
Yeah, we're at 42 minutes. Unless we want to save that completely for.
Let's do one question. We've been hyping the question. I've been putting them out there. You said your questions in and we never fucking answer them.
And then I ask you, I'm like, dude, did you set up the email? Did you set the question? Can I read the questions? And then somehow I never get access to it.
A problem when we vox is we talk about 20 15
minutes.
And like, I will address like three things and forget something every time. And like, likewise. I always tell you, I fill up a Vox with like, I only have to tell you one thing, but I talk about 20 different things to like.
Nah, it's fine. You're on three speed. I process it.
I don't feel nearly as bad since you've told me that. Let's go here with a question here.
All right, one fucking question. We're going to wrap this up. Even though that one fucking review on iTunes was like, hey guys, keep it at 40 minutes. You guys went 42 one episode. It's burped.
Let's see here.
Dead air on the conversation with the big guy. Take a little sip of wine while he gets
his question here from Andrew Nusky.
Nusky.
Besides waiting for Feed Me More Nutrition and exercise, what should I do to go from a quarter of a ton Mama's Basement IWC fucking mark to Silverback Gorilla? I'm 6'2" and 270 pounds, and I'd like to cut off that excess weight. Good luck with your product line. Well, Andrew, first of all, I think recognizing the problem is a great first step. I think you need to start setting goals from yourself. I'm actually selling Feed Me More goal boards, available on feedmemore.com. Or you can go to a local Walgreens or Walmart and get a white erase board, dry erase board. And I think you need to write down 3 to 5 goals of what you want from your life. I think when you figure out what you want to do and what you want, whether that's, you know, how you look physically or what you want out of life, I think the sooner that you figure out why you wake up each and every day, you will get closer to your goals and you'll start finding purpose when you wake up. I wish you luck, and Feed Me More Nutrition is coming out in November, and I will begin updating that the launch date here very shortly on that.
All right.
Any comments, Paul?
No, that was a solid answer. I thought we were gonna make fun of him, but we gave him a.
I've told you I don't. That's I think there. And I've told you I'm getting a lot of emails on the website, and it's some of the stuff is so serious. I don't know how to respond. Sometimes of people
really?
Thanking me and us for doing this podcast, and just I think just being honest and open and.
Just maybe, I've always thought of podcasts the way I thought of podcast. Like, I love podcasts. I mean, tremendously motivated by like cults and a lot of different other ones. But like, just being on driving and like zoning out and hearing little things and like, oh, it's interesting, or having something to look forward to while or at work or even doing. I don't know if you like doing cardio. I hate doing cardio. Pop on a podcast, makes the time go by. If they're good, if they're bad, whatever. But
if you're doing like elliptical or something, or like treadmill, it's hard if you're doing like blow up conditioning to listen to a real podcast. I feel like
that's true. That'd be a little.
I can't listen. I got to just have music on or take them off altogether.
Just
on
have
that
Batista's theme song.
Listening to I Walk Alone as I'm fucking boxing. God damn it.
That's it. I don't know what this episode brung, but
I was going to do another question. One of our complaints.
Keep going. We're 45.
I'm okay with doing another question.
Look at this guy breaking the barriers. Go ahead. Go.
We're, as long as we don't go 50, we're all right.
Okay. They gave us the cue. Batista's theme song.
Hey, Ryback, longtime fan of your work here with two questions regarding your WWE career. One, when the creative team allowed you more time on the mic, it was apparent the company believed in your character and wanted to give you a push. You would go on to win the IC title, which you learned was a formality to get you to sign a new contract. My question to you is, do you ever have any desire to stay, or did you have any desire to stay and renegotiate to see what was left for the Ryback character to accomplish, or were you mentally already out the door after your IC title run?
Before you answer, what a fucking well-worded question.
Yes.
Props to you for having a fucking brain.
I tried desperately that entire last year, to work everything out, and I really, really, truly wanted to stay, but I had outside interest, and I have other things that I'm doing now that being there was not allowing me to do, and the reason, and Vince, and you know, we talked about it before, and the way they used me my last couple months there, putting me on the pre-shows, was because I didn't sign their contract for the $1.65 million or whatever it was. I think we said 1.5, it was 1.65.
Yeah.
And the reason is I didn't, because I wanted to see if he was going to hold his word to me. He didn't. Mm-hmm. And he probably booked me that way and didn't do what he said for the most part, although he's lied to me before. It was because I didn't sign that contract right away.
Okay.
And so it was kind of a game of chicken, and I was, you know, I was sticking to my guns. So I was far checked out at those last couple months. Come WrestleMania, I was fully checked out. And I
remember even telling me WrestleMania day, you're like, I don't give a fuck.
Didn't give a shit. Literally, I wanted to fucking, and my girlfriend at the time, mm-hmm. just the fucking disorganization of that goddamn company. She fucking missed my match because they bust him and fucked it all up of the family members.
Really?
And they were late getting there, and she missed my match. Got there like right at the very end to see me fucking lose, and which was
one thing I want to say.
We broke up shortly thereafter.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Awkward.
Whole other conversation.
But I think also, but you were checked out for all, like, you're like, I'm still going to have a fucking great match.
Oh, no, checked out as far as just in the company letting me down.
Exactly.
Going out, I gave it everything I got every single time.
I thought it was fine.
And it was, and we'd lost time on all that, but it was just hard. And you say, oh, I wrestled in front of 25 or 30,000 people. Like, oh, poor you. Yeah, but everyone else is wrestling in front of 100,000, and you work your entire year and bust your ass, and then you get out there and nobody's paying attention. People are getting their food.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not a true 25,000, no. And it's like so scattered out, and like, oh, there's a wrestling match going on, and
sure,
and it just sucked. But part two of the question is, what is your proudest match or favorite feud during your time with the company? For me personally, your feud with Mark Henry that led up to WrestleMania was money.
What kind of drugs you fucking taking?
What the fuck are they taking? I feel like there was a lot more they could have done with that angle that was ultimately dropped by having you lose in the payoff.
Yeah, you should have fucking won.
Yeah, we've talked about that. And my favorite, I think, and it was for me the proudest moment outside of winning the IC title and the boys in the back waiting there and getting the round of applause outside of Gorilla.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to get heated in Gorilla.
Come on, really?
No, I don't know. But it was like all the real, like the guys.
The ones that matter.
Yeah. And who you're not competing against, kind
sure.
of, and who I've been with from the beginning in developmental. And that, and I think my first Hell in a Cell match with CM Punk,
mm-hmm.
because that was my first main event outside of doing live events, working them, and which that was thrown together last minute, obviously. And I never liked any of our matches, but that was more on him not wanting to put any effort into wanting to do shit, and that's the truth. And but I was fully developed at that point and could have done anything. So
that's a whole nother. I remember watching that. It was during Hurricane Sandy up here.
Which yeah.
was a fucking, it was a total wasteland. And I was really, really drunk at a bar. And an Irish man walked up to me while we're watching it. And he's like, do you want to do some cocaine? And I looked at him. I was like, nah, it's okay.
Which we will get into
which
eventually
we'll get into.
About the drug episode. So,
but I remember that. And I remember, like, you know.
It was a cool moment at the end, though. I got to be on the Hell
on
in the Cell.
On top of the cage and the gimmick, yeah.
Yeah, and, but it was such a shitty finish and, like, just an end of all the momentum. And, yeah, so, but as far as, like, that was my first main event and being in that position, and it did, I believe it did pretty good buy rate numbers for that pay-per-view.
Okay.
from everything that I was told, and it was good, man. So that was saying that was when I knew I was like, this ain't so bad. I can do this, you know. It's,
sweet.
You have to go through it, and you have to live it. You have to experience it to know, and it was a breeze from there. So,
well, thanks everybody for listening. We're deep in. You can follow me at Buck Never Stops. Or Ryback, he's Ryback22 on
Twitter,
yeah,
the big guy Ryback22 on Instagram, and Ryback247 on Snapchat. Feedmemore.com,
WrestlePro Online.com for your New York, New Jersey independent needs, or if you want to be a wrestler, CreativePro Wrestling.com. Me and myself with the newly debuted Kurt Hawkins. We're teaching people out in Long Island. We need people to sign up for the goddamn school, so please do so. And remember, rate, review, subscribe.
That greatly helps.
We appreciate it. Helps the little algorithm of this podcast,
and I think I want to end it with successful people are always hungry. What are you? Feed Me More Nutrition, coming in November. You've just listened to an episode of Conversation with the Big Guy. Thank you.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's the Labor Day sale at Ace. Now through Monday only, buy 2 gallons of our top paint brands, Valspar, Clark & Kensington, and Royal, and get the third gallon free. And with the Ace Extra Mile Promise, if it ever takes more than one trip to complete your paint project, we'll bring you what you need and deliveries free. Don't miss the buy 2 get 1 free paint sale only at Ace.
Limit 2 free gallons of equal or lesser value. Prices may vary. Delivery subject to availability. Visit acehardware.com for more details.